Okay, John, where are you taking us today?
Didn't I take you to a very nice place? What do you think?
Beautiful. It's real picturesque, picture postcard Ireland village, isn't it?
Isn't it? Absolutely. And of course, we have Canaan's Bar on one side of it, we have Paz on the other, and we have Ryan's down the road. And the thing is, they look so picturesque because they're maintained, because of course, they're all still open, vibrant businesses. And this must be unique in Ireland. It's a tiny village up here, and I suppose it's a measure of just how successful the community has been and in maintaining its numbers, that in fact, you're able to have three vibrant pubs continuing on here.
And this would be a popular spot for walkers. Why?
It's a popular spot for walkers because you can see we're in a beautiful place here on a beautiful day. And what do you see all around the place? You see lovely hills. There are hills in all directions. And in fact, when you're up here, there are actually 5 waymarked walks up here. And the great thing about them then is they all have stories to tell, like Eamon on Kinnick or Hugh O'Donnell, who passed through on his way down to Kinsale. So they all have stories because there's actually the people. These are places, unlike the top of Galtymore, where there has always been a vibrant community. And as you can see around here, it is a vibrant community. And I'll take you on a ramble now and show you some of the sites, what the community have achieved.
Okay, here we are at the bog at the very centre of Upper Church. I know historically this would have been a very important place locally, and it's now been developed into a beautiful walkway.
Yes, it would have been indeed. The first thing is, I'd say up to about 300 years ago, it would have been considered a waste of space. Because funnily enough, people don't realise it. People only copped on in Ireland that you could burn turf about 300 years ago. Up to then, they burned timber and they burned charcoal. Okay, so the bog here, as you can see, we're looking into this beautiful bog. And as you can see, it's at the bottom of the depression, the hills I spoke to you. So after the Ice Age, Ireland was very wet. There was a lot of water from the melting glaciers, and that would have poured in off the hills and formed the lake down here. And that lake then doesn't really have an outlet. It's at the bottom of a depression. And so the water stays there and it stagnates to some extent. And then over time in this water, vegetation begins to grow around it and then within it. And that all goes to the bottom and it begins to build up there. And then you have the bog building process, where sphagnum moss grows along the top. And that covers in the water. And what it does then is it absorbs an awful lot of the water. So it dries out the lake. And that's the conditions then for the creation of peat. Plus it also exudes acid. It acidifies the area. So the result is then you have this stagnant water with vegetation all the time falling in on top of it, and gradually the process of peat building begins. And of course then they were a waste of space up to 1600 years ago. Then where they became terribly important was, up to that the bogs weren't very important because Ireland was mostly forested. Now the forestries in Ireland were cut down mainly to build the British ships. So these became terribly important. They were terribly important to local people as a source of food, of fuel. And so people would come together, and I think later on I have a man who was much more of an expert on that, but the bog and the haymaking were the great social occasions where communities would come together. And it's sometimes said that if you had the turf saved, the hay saved, and then you say in tape and cockbet, you were grand for the winter.
Okay, well, we'll continue on a little bit more. That's a very contentious topic now, with what's going to happen with turf. We might talk to that with your special guest as well later.
Yes.
But I think a lot of people might presume that because it's a bog, there isn't much to see on a walk in the bog, but there's so much to see.
There is, and we're going to do that now. And I think the thing is that if you went to the past, you would think of a bog. I think they were always regarded. Firstly, remember, turf cutting in Ireland is only about 300 years old, that people realised how important the bogs were. Up to that, I think bogs were considered a waste of space. Then they were considered useful for turf cutting and working them out, but other than that, no good. Now we are looking at them as a unique and marvellous ecosystem that people are interested in. In fact, the Germans who are coming here loved it and loved the idea of cutting out a sod of turf and that kind of thing. I think it's a difficult problem in rural Ireland. That's my opinion on it. But I'd hate to see the unique smell. You know the smell,
yes,
of the turf fire, the turf smoke?
Yeah.
I just hate it. I think that is one of the most evocative smells from my childhood. I'd hate to see that go.
And John, how long is this bog walk?
It's a relatively short walk. I think it's about a kilometre all around it. But again, it's done. I mean, most communities would think we have a bog, right? That's great. We have a bog. Sure, that's it. But these people, not only had the Germans out cutting turf here and doing all that kind of thing, they've also put a lovely walkway all around it as well as that. And in fact, if you look there, not only that, in winter, it's fully lighted as well as that. And lots of people love to come up here and do this even in winter. So that's the kind of community innovation you get here as well. Yeah. And of course, the bog isn't, it's, you know, it's probably maybe Brussels bureaucrats will be delighted, because this bog, which would have been the centre of community life, isn't really being worked anymore. So it's left, returned to its natural state. Okay, if you look down ahead then, there's a man I'm going to introduce you down ahead. So I don't want him standing beside me and doing this, because you see, I have so many good things to say about him. But of course, the first thing is, you know, the first thing, and his most famous claim to fame is, well, he was born in 1937, so people can calculate what age he was. But his most famous claim to them, this area wasn't a disadvantaged area, and he turned it into a disadvantaged area. And imagine that's your biggest claim. That's a positive here, because of course, as far as my understanding here of Connie is that, you know, he was born in, I think he will admit this, he was born into, like most people in rural Ireland, particularly around here, he was brought into impoverished circumstances, really. And he had left school at 13, and to get a capital base together, he worked with local farmers, he worked in the campaign in the sugar factory. He may talk about that. And I think the interesting thing there is, before the EU came along, it's impossible, immeasurable to think the difference that the campaign, when people could get part-time work in the sugar factory, what a difference that made to rural Ireland. Yeah. And then he had a capital base, and then of course Ireland was gradually modernising and entering into the EU. And I think when he took over the farm, he had to leave school young because his father was quite ill, so he had to work the farm. But he when he took over the farm, I think he had 4 cows, and he built that up into 100 cows, not now, which is pretty big herd even still, but 100 cows, I think, back in the 1970s. And that, of course, was not just big, it was humongous here for Upper Church and that thing. And then he was involved in the IFA. Now, one of the problems with it was the EU were bringing in a disadvantaged area scheme, right? And this would give special payments to farmers, would ensure they could continue in farming. But being bureaucrats, what did they do? They said the simple thing is, we'll put all the West Coast counties can get it and nobody else. That was obviously totally crazy, because obviously if you talk the west coast of Ireland, there's some of the finest land in Ireland. This is East Donegal, East Galway, North Kerry, where Kerry Co-op are situated, whereas there is very marginal land up here. And the man I'm going to talk to, he believed in the rightness of this, right? And he fought passionately, and Upper Church was included as a disadvantaged area, and this has made a huge difference to it. And then he was finished with the IFA. Most of the stuff there, he's been deeply involved in it, but as a community, he's always been able to work with other people. So now that, you know, we'll walk down to him now, and we'll see what he has to say.
Great.
He probably won't have much to say at all, you know.
Connie, lovely to meet you.
Alison, you're very welcome. Delighted. We pride ourselves on our hospitality in this area. And of course, John is an old friend of ours. And I have to say straight away, that I heard some of what John was saying about me, and, you know, take most of it with a grain of salt. I was just a community worker. I worked, put a good lot of work into the community, and there were many of us involved.
But you're born and bred as well. I mean, a lot of us would joke about how we had to go to school barefoot in the winter, but you were one of the few who actually did have to do that back in the day in Upper Church.
In fairness, we had some kind of shoes for the winter, but we enjoyed going barefooted in the summertime. I remember looking forward to the day I went in a place called Garna Kielke. School is closed now. It has a picturesque place like most, and I know I'm prejudiced. There's Thomas Davis, the poet and patriot, I think, who penned the lines, "You'd meet him in his cabin crude, or dancing with his dark-eyed Mary. You'd swear they knew no other mood but mirth and love into prairie." Now, of course, there were several other, and there were bad days and all the rest of it, but in general, I suppose, we fairly well enjoyed ourselves.
When you compare today to when you were growing up then in Upper Church, what stands out to you as the biggest
Well, the standard of living, Alison. Yeah. There's no comparison in the standard of living. And there was no question, like, vast majority of people had a horse and car or an ass and car. And indeed, I remember my late father and one of my brothers and myself going to Munster finals with the ass and car. We placed there at Maharsy Kalainen, we stabled the ass. Now, my grandchildren tell me, Granddad, that's a bad word, you shouldn't say that anymore. But as far as I'm concerned, look, we always called him an ass, and he was a useful animal too. So, there's a lot of changes in that way. Of course, the opportunity of education. People have great opportunity of education now, and so on. But we have a vibrant, active community, and we got help from a lot of people. I suppose often when people see that you're inclined to be active and get something done, they tend to help you.
And John was talking about one of the standout achievements that you have from your years and years in the IFA was making sure that Upper Church and Tipperary and these parts came in under a disadvantaged area in Europe. Now, looking on the face of that, you probably don't want your area to be seen as disadvantaged. But in fact, that's what benefits the area.
Oh, no, I'm proud. I'm very proud of the fact that we're a hill people. And in fact, when I was growing up, there were three distinct types of people. There were mountainy people. We refer to ourselves as mountainy people. Then there were country people down on the good flat land where John lives, and townspeople. So we had the three different types. It was very unfair that when the disadvantaged areas were announced, the 12 western counties, of course, it was easy for the bureaucrats. You could sit down and draw a pencil down across them. Mm. So draw a line down and you had your disadvantaged area. But we fought hard, and it was no one-man battle either. We got great help. You got great help locally and so on, and help from various politicians, I'll have to say as well. But now, we finally, I had started keeping a diary at the time because of a lot of old meetings, and I know that people were some people were sneering at me, what the hell does he think he is with a diary? But I think it was 7 years and 120 meetings before we finally got the area disadvantaged. And it brought considerable, and it's still bringing considerable benefits to the community. It's now called the area of natural constraint. You had three different criteria to meet. Steep slopes, well, we have plenty of them. The other one was income substantially below the national average. They were the two main ones, I suppose, anyway. So we got it after a lot of fighting, and I suppose maybe it gave us confidence to fight for other things. But I'd emphasise again that Con Ryan was only one, and I got good old satisfaction out of it. Then I became very involved here in the in community activity, and we saw, for example, that housing for the elderly was needed. Involved in Vincent de Paul most of my life, and we did some kind of an old amateur survey. We built a many, I think we have 13 in all.
I think, and then with the housing and the creche as well, what you're doing is making sure that there are resources and facilities there for younger people to stay in these areas, because what we're seeing now is almost the death of a lot of rural communities. The people aren't staying. So is that what you'd credit? Maybe Upper Church is able to buck the trend because of that. They're putting in those resources.
I'd say to a great extent. If you look at the setup here, the farms are getting bigger. But at the same time, the population is improving. Go back to the 10 years before the Irish potato famine, you had in this parish, you had 6,300 people, and it went down to 1,000. And I remember Skull Isagon here, there is 140 pupils in it. That was built, it was granted to the community here by a man called Dick Burke. Dick was Minister for Education and in fact was a former Upper Church man. But one wit said, there were a few of us talking and, you know, fine school, lot of rooms, and will there be, the way the population is going, will there be pupils enough for it? Will they have the children? Well, he said, "'Twill make a fine forester's hut in 30 years' time." Well, thankfully, I checked today, before I came out to talk to you, Alison, and discovered that in the last few years, it has gone up 20.
That's brilliant. Now, Connie, you look at what's happening with turf. I mean, walking around a bog here, how do you stand on the turf issue?
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's a change that came. I liked the bog in my time. Now, I remember groups of people here, the families, and usually the whole family would be out. Right here now where we are, there were a family, McLaughlin's. They're here away now, but they're huge dairy farmers. But they had a piece of this bog, and they used to make something that was called hand turf. The only people I ever saw making it was thrown up with shovels mostly, and I remember the youngsters walking on it, and then they'd finally level it off and cut it out with a hay knife. But the bog, we used to cut in a bog up in the hill, it was about seven miles away. But I remember this, I think I heard in the distance, John's talking about the smell of the turf. The smell of the turf was lovely. The work was hard, really hard. But at the same time, it wasn't all, and I often say this to the Germans, it wasn't all hard work. You know, we enjoyed at the break now for you'd see a lot of fires lighting around the bog, and it was
a real focal point for the community.
Oh, it was, and it was no bad place as a youngster to meet the opposite sex either. there'd be plenty of women there as well. But the point about it, though, is that as far as I'm concerned, that is gone now. I suppose I'd like to see it preserved to an extent. But I think the important thing, and I'm coming back to, is all the houses that are being built here. They're being built all over the place. And the spikes are all, the indicators, I suppose I call them, are all good. They're all positive. Mm. The as I said, the school numbers have improved. And as well as that, the we have an excellent young people, an excellent young population here now. A way better than we were. They're better educated, they have more confidence and all the rest of them. Now, I have the height of, you know, I know some people of my age would say, oh, should God help us, they're a terror. I don't say that. I think they're fantastic people. I think they're better people than we were.
Well, can I finish with you by asking you, what advice would you have for other rural communities around the county who feel like there's nothing we can do? Sure, the government just want to get rid of us altogether, and look, we may as well just lay down and take it. What would be your message?
Well, my message, first of all, certainly would not be to lay down and take it. And that a lot can be done if we only go at it with the right kind of attitude. If people would come together, look at what they have, try to develop it, I believe a lot can be done. Under this chestnut tree, this village smithy stands, a smith, the mighty man is he, with large and sinewy hands, and the muscles of his brawny arms are strong as iron bands. Now, all that fascinated me as a youngster. But they're gone. But I think that not to keep complaining about them, and not to keep fighting to bring back things that I've heard now, and I've heard politicians talking about the Garda stations should be open in rural areas. That will never happen. Just won't. Mm. And so what we should be doing is looking at and building it on what we have.
Connie, thank you so much for welcoming us to Upper Church. And I'm sure if anyone is around, they can just ask around for you and you'll give them a tour of the bog as well.
I mean, be delighted.
Society has to move on, and I think and Upper Church has done that, and I think it's a model for other communities. But the main thing is, not only do all the projects, I think, actually
producing themselves, but the Aldi Bond, the community, putting them together as well. And in fact, I was down here one day, they were putting in the path we're walking on now, and there was earth moving equipment that was being provided free gratis to do it. And that's the sort of spirit here that I think the other communities should try and emulate.